Okay, it's the Lunchtime Social. It's a Tuesday. My co-host today is Ali Hayden, otherwise known as Prickles. And we've also got Mitch MacGyver in. Is it MacGyver?
MacGyver.
Yeah. Welcome, Mitch. You're from the NHS. You're working at the NHS at the moment.
That's right, yes. I work at St Mary's in the A&E department.
So you're in the A&E department, so you're in at the sharp end.
Certainly am.
Okay, and that's where you used to work, Ali, is
that
right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so we've got you in, obviously, because I think what we're going to do for the next 55 minutes or so is basically highlight some issues, and it might not be the way that people think that it is, because I think too many people are unaware of certain things, and that's what this this hour is about.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? I mean, I've got loads of questions, but do you want to start?
I stopped working at St Mary's 4 years ago. I took mutually agreed redundancy, and I left because of stress of the job. I wasn't able to switch off from my work, and also I had personal things going on at the same time. There was pressures there at that time, and it seems as though they've kind of just amounted since to bring us to the crisis that the NHS is in at the moment throughout the whole country, not just St Mary's.
Do you know what? You mentioned crisis now. I just want to ask you, Mitch. I mean, we all know that the NHS has had its problems, if you like. It's you know, it's been highlighted, documented. But we got to January and all of a sudden, bang, it's in the news, it's top stories. And you think to yourself, are they playing a game here? Are they using this as a political tool here because we know what's coming up, a general election? Is that the way you see it?
No, I don't actually. The sudden increase in January has been unprecedented across the country. But what we've seen at St Mary's is a huge amount of people coming in with respiratory illness, and that has certainly compounded the problems. Yet, the political parties are going to use the NHS as a tool for their own gain. But from my perspective, we have to then look at why these problems are occurring. And it's not just within the NHS. It's further on where we talk about bed blocking, because there is no social care in the community anymore. There's just not enough funding out there to move these people on. And so you have people staying in hospital for a longer period than would normally be necessary.
Okay, and I noticed that this what you were talking about just then is big in the news today. This has come out today about the aftercare. Would you call it the aftercare, after service?
Yeah, the social care. People are needing care packages to go back home, or requiring nursing homes, residential care, those sorts of things. There's just not enough availability out there at the moment to sustain what's going on.
So is that the answer? So is that where we've got to go? Is that where we've got to start building more care homes and stuff like that to accommodate this, you know, at the other end of the care?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We certainly do. It's common knowledge that, you know, patients are discharged from hospital early and they become failed discharges and they then come back into the system. And that compounds it again. So it's a revolving circle. And we need to stop that. We need to look at what these people actually do need to sustain, you know, a hospital to work effectively.
Do you think, is that aimed at a certain age? Are we talking about an age group here, or is it across the board?
It's across the board. It's not any particular age group. You know, people say, oh, there's a huge amount of elderly people in this population. Yes, there is. But there is also people now coming down through the ages, even the lowest 50s, that need social input, and they're not getting it.
So how do we, just say for instance, because I thought first of all, oh, you know, it's an elderly problem, we need to build, you know, have more care homes and so on. How does that, you know, how would it work with younger people? What do they need then? Because, you know, I'm just looking at it and thinking, well, where do, just say for instance, if you needed care, you'd go home and the old man would look after you.
So it's so not how would it possibly be possible, though, is it?
It wouldn't. So how would it work? How would it work?
Well, it'd be nice to think that, you know, families would support their
sure.
relatives. But, you know, financial issues come into play. It's not always possible to have that one at home and then somebody's got to leave work, for instance, and provide 24-hour care.
Sure.
So that impacts then socially on everybody again. So,
and then you could go to the other end that just say, I was in an accident and Stan could look after me at home, but he couldn't manage to get me up. He couldn't manage to get me out of bed and sit me in a chair.
Sure.
Then I would require social input there for someone to come and do that. So although Stan would be my carer at home, I would still need additional care at home to be able to stay there. So it's all, you know, has an impact, doesn't it?
So again, I mean, what do we need? We don't need homes. We don't need places. We need people. We need nurses.
We need more
carers.
An awful lot more social funding, I think. And the social funding has been cut and cut and cut for year on year for a long time. And it's now having an impact that the hospitals, last week, as reported in the Isle of Wight County Press, there were 43 patients at St Mary's Hospital that were still occupying a hospital bed because there was nowhere to either discharge them to, or there was no social care package in place for them to go home to.
Right.
So they can't discharge someone, I don't know, 82, with no care package in place, so they stay in hospital.
And if they discharge themselves, the chances are they're going to come straight back
on, you know, and that's what I'm saying, you know, yeah. It's a knock-on effect all round. And like Mitch said, it isn't just the elderly population. There are a lot of younger people that kind of expect St Mary's to cater for what they want. You know, when I was a child, you had to be half dead before you went to A&E.
Mm.
You know, I remember me and my brother having a game at home and I had a really bad cut to my head and it was absolutely pouring out with blood. My mum sat me up on the sofa, whacked a bit of margarine on there and that was that. You know, she wouldn't have dreamt of taking me to A&E.
Well, that's the way kind of most people would be. You know, you go there as a last...
It's a last resort. It should be a last point of contact. That, you know, if you've got a broken leg, that's fine. If you've got a broken wrist, that's fine. But, you know, for a little bump on the head, or when I worked there, and this is absolutely the honest truth, we had a mum come in with her son, and her son was absolutely screaming the place down. He had a paper cut on his finger and she got quite nasty that the emergency nurse practitioner that I was working with at the time said, just put a plaster on it and send them home. That was so totally unnecessary, that complete whole visit to A&E, and it tied up me, it tied up an emergency nurse practitioner, a receptionist on the desk booking them in, you know, and it's just... I'm not saying they're all like that, but people do need to think before they actually attend.
There must be a percentage of that. I mean, we'll ask Mitch what sort of, you know, if he's got percentage or is that a common thing that happens in a mo. But I mean, I just look at this and I think I might have said to you last week, you know, when it comes down to it, these people are wasting people's time and money, and they should get billed for it. And I know, you know, the NHS is a wonderful thing. It was invented for people that didn't have any money. But when you've got people abusing it, I mean, just take, for instance, I said this last week, you just used it as an analogy. The guy who got upset because Manchester United weren't doing very well, so he phoned the police. And this was a big story. Like, he phoned the police and was saying, go around and arrest, you know, the guy who was managing Man United. It's not right. You know, Man United should be winning games. And you're looking at the thing, you phone 999 to do that. It's a similar thing when you get a kid turn up with the mum and the dad. He's got a paper cut. You know, that's the long and short of it.
Yeah.
You're wasting money and time and effort. So I'd like, the trouble is, we said this also last week, if you put something in place that punishes those people, that is more time, more money, more effort.
Yeah, more having to be spent on trying to reclaim money back.
So maybe we've just got to re-educate people. How common is the stories that you've just heard, you know, time wasters? Just say, for instance, obviously you've got to be very careful, and I don't want to put you on the spot at all. You know, and I don't want to overgo anybody, because I think what you guys do up there, you're at the sharp end, you're the ones doing all the work, and yet you're governed by, you know, pen pushers and so on and so forth. So I want you to be very careful how you answer the question. But is this a common thing?
It's not overly common, but it does happen. And I think part of the problem is educating the public as to when it is appropriate to attend A&E rather than criticise them for coming there. And I think part of our role is, when we get people like that, is not to admonish them or punish them, but actually try and educate them so that they use the service more.
It's positive. It's a positive way, yeah. I mean, should there... I mean, have we... I went somewhere at the weekend and I was a bit... I was outspoken with the way something was set up. Do you have... Is A&E... Because A&E is changing all the time. Life is changing all the time. The world is changing all the time. Is it set up properly... to, you know, so that it works properly? I mean, just as an observation, I'm just looking at that and thinking, right, if you had a bloke, a doctor, a nurse meeting and greeting at the door, they could kind of decide whether or not they need the A&E or not. I mean, is that system in place? Would that work? Or, you know, have we got it set up so it's perfect?
We have a setup now which I think is doing a very, very good job. And the figures show me that 95% of people that attend A&E or the Beacon Centre are triaged by a clinician, and they are appropriately directed either to the GP or to A&E.
Right, OK. So everything is in place at the moment, it should be?
Absolutely.
I mean, how would it work? Just say, for instance, if I got this crackpot idea, you think you've got two or three nurses at the front door, and they say, right, OK, you've got a paper cut, that's all, you can clear off your waste. Not like that, obviously. They would say, well, go and see the doctor in the morning if you need to. But I mean, if you had that, would that alleviate some of the problem?
We've got it, and it is alleviating the problem.
So that is in place?
You've that got is certainly in place. Right, yeah, OK. The triage nurse... is a very experienced nurse in A&E, and they can treat the minor injuries, things like paper cuts, in triage. Those people are seen, they're educated, and they're gone. The others are then appropriately triaged either to the GP or to the appropriate place in A&E, whether it be majors, minors, or resus.
It's just say, for instance, if I had a paper cut now, would you tell me to put a plaster on it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you? Not just, oh, look, it's a paper cut, it'll dry out in a minute, leave it.
No, put a plaster on it, it'll be fine.
You're not going to just pay lip service to me and say, put a plaster on it?
No.
That's the point I'm trying to make. So that's what you would do anyway?
It's a paper cut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you?
But that has potential to get worse.
Right, okay.
Okay, so if you get infection,
yeah,
then it becomes a bigger problem.
Good point. That's what I was trying to get at.
So, yeah, we put a plaster on it. We try and diminish the effects of the paper cut, and then you're fine.
Okay. I hope so. My finger don't fall off or anything like that. But I mean, how difficult a job is it? Has it got over the last few years? Has it got? Just say, for instance, you go back. How long have you been working at the NHS for?
11 years now.
Only 11 years.
Yeah, I've been a nurse for 34 though.
So you've been a nurse for 34 years. So I mean, how you must have seen some changes over the years, and how does it differ now, and how much more difficult is it?
It is more difficult. The stress levels are certainly getting higher and higher. But at the same time, the Trust is addressing those issues.
Good.
I don't know whether anybody saw it the other night. You know, the Isle of Wight was highlighted on Channel 4 News. And that brought out some very positive things for all of us.
See, the thing is, I'm a great believer, and if we get these things out and we talk about them, and we talk about the worries, we talk about the concerns, and hey, look, if somebody's been in the industry for X amount of years and they've got a bit of advice or they've got something positive to put on the table, I think we all benefit from that. But I just get the feeling sometimes that we are we just bury things and we just get on with it. And I don't think our media helps, because our media say, I just want to ask you another question, and I know we talked about this off air, like our media would come out and think things, and they would mislead people slightly because it's a sexy story where they say, oh, immigration's up, so that means more and more issues with the hospital. And that's not, well, is that the case? That's a question.
Certainly not.
No,
absolutely not.
So when they say that, it must be so frustrating, because it's misleading, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very misleading, and it gives people the wrong view, and people then get on the bandwagon and they take this further and further. It's certainly not the case on the island.
So we need to, you know, we need our media to be more helpful, more truthful. And, you know, if we get things out there and it is more helpful, more truthful, it means that you can get the help, you know, the structure that you need to put in place, rather than having to keep answering stupid questions like, is immigration a problem? Is immigration an issue? And it's not.
No, it's not.
Is that is that based on just the Isle of Wight, or is that can you say that across the board?
I can say across the board for the NHS, it's not. Immigration is not causing the problem.
Yeah, there you go. Then you've heard that from the horse's mouth. But how many times have you heard it? Heard somebody in the
pub? You
hear
it all the time, don't you?
You know, because immigration's, you know, it's this and it's that, and it's not true.
Because immigration is a good thing to play with, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
You know,
I think
everybody's kind of talking about immigration. It's going to be a political football, isn't it, in the run-up to the general election. And I think a lot of people think the easiest option is to put that onto the NHS because they can play with that as well then, you know, and that isn't the case.
OK, we've got some, loads of questions. Have you got any more, first of all?
I just wanted to ask Mitch that 2 weeks ago, 13 hospitals throughout the country declared major incidents, as was reported. St Mary's didn't declare one, Mitch. Can you tell us why that was?
Well, there's one simple reason. It's the water. We can't move patients elsewhere to other hospitals.
So declaring a major incident means that a hospital has shut its doors to any new patients and they are diverting them elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't got that facility, have we?
No.
So what did we do instead, Mitch? Did we do anything?
We did. We did a lot of things. And I saw a lot of support from the management in that hospital who came down to A&E to highlight the problem and to help move patients as best we could.
Does that mean it's impossible to be in that situation because of the stretch of water?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can't ever be in the same situation as what other people can call it. What is the technical term?
It's called a major incident, it's where A&E basically goes into lockdown. It will not accept any new patients. So the facilities on the mainland, within 5, 10, 15 miles, you've got another hospital. We haven't. We've got a stretch of water, which obviously stops that. So yeah. St Mary's... when I work there, you know, when pressures do get too much, that St Mary's try their hardest to cope with absolutely everything that's thrown at them because we haven't got an alternative.
That's even more pressure, isn't it? From I'm just asking the basic question from an idiot from the outside looking in thinking, hang on a minute, so you can never ever call it, you know, and that situation that you put now,
yeah.
We can never ever be like that on the island because of the stretch of water.
No, we can't.
So does that hamper you? Does that treat you any differently? Do you feel, I mean, obviously you just get on with it, but I mean, you know, that's basically what you've got to do, but does it hamper you?
It does hamper us, and it puts a lot of pressure on the staff within the department. But, you know, I'm blessed to work with some really good staff there who give everything.
And the management are obviously fully aware
sure.
that they cannot declare that. And, I mean, I've been down there before when I've worked there, and we have had really, really big pressure, you know, lack of staff, just the amount of people coming through the door, and management have come down and they're sort of, you know, oh, you need to go for a tea break, you've been working for 8 hours and you haven't had a break, and they've provided sandwiches, and they do their utmost because they actually realise that we are unique. You know, we cannot do anything else other than what we do.
Okay, I've got loads of questions that's coming into my head now, but here's one you probably already answered, but can you answer it for Vix just in case? Is our current A&D crisis due to a funding issue, organisation issue, or patients not thinking whether their trip is necessary?
It's certainly not about patients coming in unnecessarily. I think everybody has the right to access healthcare. Now, whether it's appropriate or not, we can debate at a later stage. But those people still deserve to be treated and educated. The biggest problem that's causing A&E to be in such a situation is the fact that we cannot move patients to beds because the beds are just not available. And that knock-on effect has come from the social issue again, that we cannot discharge patients. So if we cannot discharge patients, once A&E gets to a stage where we have 10, 15 patients waiting for beds, we cease to function effectively as an A&E because we can't move. And what we need is the ability to move patients on. You know, the government says we have to see and treat and discharge or admit these patients within 4 hours. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a very good target. But realistically, we cannot do it because we do not have the ability to move these patients into beds. And this is the thing at St Mary's that they're looking at. That, you know, it was in the county press. They've taken over a floor at Solent Grange Nursing Home to try and ease the pressure so that we can move patients on. So the trust as a whole is very dedicated to providing a service to the public on the Isle of Wight.
Right.
And they are now looking at staffing numbers in A&E to ease the pressure on the staff.
Right.
But how do you recruit nurses? Because realistically, if I was 30 years younger and I was looking at coming into healthcare now, forget it. I wouldn't bother. Because the rewards are not there and the pressure is quite immense. However, I've been there 34 years. I love what I do. And I serve the public. And that's all I want to do. And I want to provide a service, along with my colleagues, that will provide the Isle of Wight with an excellent healthcare.
Well done, you. I say it's really good to hear, and it's kind of this. Just in 20 odd minutes, you've really opened my eyes, and you've simplified it in such a way that you look at it and think it's not rocket science. Somebody should be able to sort something out somewhere along the line and alleviate the issues. Do you think that, you know, it's going to happen? I mean, they've started to do things. Are they going to be able to do more? Are they going to solve, you know, the issues, the major crux of the matter? Are they going to be able to do this, or is it right? Okay, we can only do this, and it's going to alleviate for a period of time, and then we'll have to go back to where we were. Is this the way forward?
I sincerely hope it's the way forward, but I think it's up to the political parties to look at the NHS and look at the social care funding and try and bring the two together. At the moment, you've got social care, which is down to your local government, and you've got NHS, which is your major government. Mm. Somewhere, somebody's got to make a solution to bring the both together so they work together and provide the actual funding that people need so that we can alleviate the pressure on the NHS.
And our NHS, even now, even with all the problems it's got, is actually the envy of the world. You know, we provide free healthcare. And there are so many countries that don't do that, you know. And I know from when I worked there, the comments from patients from different hospitals that were here on holiday or visiting relatives or whatever, actually needing to visit A&E, used to say how fantastic our hospital was. And having worked there, it is. It's a fantastic place to work. There's a great team of people there all the time. You know, it's like A&E. It's like a little family in there. Everybody looks out for everyone. You know, but obviously working under pressure, it does take its toll. And,
okay.
You know.
It seems to me, I mean, you put it simply, I mean, it's the other end of the scale. That's the issue. You've got the, you know, beds are clogged up purely and simply because you can't offload, or if that's not the correct term, see, my bedside manner would be useless, wouldn't it? You know, it'd be you can't get rid of the patients that you need to get rid of because there's nowhere for them to go. That's basically it, which holds up people using beds. Is that it? Simple.
Yeah, it is. It's that simple. If we can discharge patients safely with the appropriate care packages they need, or the right residential home, the right care, then yeah, A&E would be able to move patients on quicker.
Okay. You put your hand up.
I feel like I'm at school.
In.
But it's like Mitch was saying about the rewards. I mean, when I first started at St Mary's, I worked on a respiratory ward, and we used to bath the patients, we used to do their hair, we used to take them down the duck pond for a walk, you know, we used to take them out in the wheelchair, you'd have a cup of tea with them. You don't actually get time to do that with the patients anymore, which in itself is a lot of the nursing staff miss that. There's just not the time to do that, you know, and because of pressures, because of 4-hour targets, because of having to move people on, you know, there's such a high turnover of patients anyway that what your vocation for actually going into that role, if you like, you've lost that. Because it is just so full on and so busy, then I think central government needs to realise, in amongst their funding of the NHS and all the rest of it, there are actually real people involved.
Yeah.
It's not just numbers.
Too right.
There are actually not just real people, sick, dying, poorly people that we need to look after, and we need to give them the basics.
Would you, it's a political question, I mean, do you think our system would work, or we wouldn't have so many issues if Maggie Thatcher hadn't closed so many hospitals back in the 1980s? Would we still have these issues?
No, I think having more hospitals would certainly help. because it would give you more facility to care for these people. But, you know, it's also looking at what's cost-effective as well.
Right. Well, so, I mean, you know, so many people on the island have said in the past, oh, we've only got one hospital, what do you expect? We've got 140,000-odd people that live here. We're one of the biggest constituents, and yet we lost, you know, Ryde Hospital some years ago. Do you think that, you know, in hindsight, was that a good thing? You know, was it a bad thing? Are we now feeling the effect of it?
I think we're feeling the effect of it, but also think you've got to look at St Mary's, one hospital on the island. Would it be cost effective to have other hospitals? Could you staff it? Could you do these things with it? Because we just don't have those capabilities. I think if you look across the board, and certainly St Mary's, we have people from many, many different countries and cultures working there, and they all have their own input into the hospital. And could you make St Mary's bigger? Possibly.
Yeah.
But then I would still say, how are you going to staff it? Because nurses are just not there anymore. We just don't have that capability to recruit, and it's very, very difficult.
So there was a question that was asked yesterday. I think this is Dame Shirley said that one of her relations was saying that maybe some of the issues are over here, where we get a lot of people coming across from various countries, and they train with St Mary's, or they train here in the UK. They stay here for a very short period of time, and then they clear off elsewhere. Is that, I mean, does that cause issues? Because you've taken the time and the trouble to train somebody because they've come over to this country. I've got no issues with people coming into this country whatsoever and training. But then when they take their skills elsewhere, is that a drain on the NHS?
Yes, it is. But then I would argue that they're leaving for a reason, and we need to address those reasons. Why are these people coming and training and then suddenly thinking, well, I can get better elsewhere? Because the NHS is a very valuable asset to this country, but at the same time, when nurses are not even getting a 1% pay rise,
yeah,
why would you want to stay?
Exactly. A good point. Well made. Got some other questions here. You ready for some? There's some stinky ones here, I'm afraid. But, you know, bat it away if, you know, because I know you're only here to talk about A&D, but there are other issues that people have brought up as well. And before that, should we take a call? Yeah, you okay? We're taking a call?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's take a call then. Hi, who's this?
You're taking calls today, old chap.
Yeah, we are. You're live on air. What's your question,
Mel?
How
absolutely splendid.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you. What we need here is a fundamental change of attitude at the heart of government. If there isn't enough money going into the NHS at the moment, there needs to be, but we need to justify why. And it seems to me that running decent quality public services ought to be viewed as the reward for a well-run economy. So if we've got politicians who are just wanting to cut everything, on the news today has been the police commissioner for our area saying if there are any more cuts, we will cease to be a properly policed area because the police just can't make any more cuts. There's no more cutting room. The same is true for the hospital, obviously. And at this forthcoming general election, there doesn't appear to be anybody who's putting forward anything of a practical nature towards rescuing the NHS. I've no doubt we all agree is the jewel in the crown that we just cannot afford to lose. So if politicians of all parties were to say, look, you know, We can't allow the NHS to collapse. We can't allow the vulnerable to be left out on a limb. We've got to look after people and create a civilised society. And to do that, it costs money. Well, you need a properly run economy for that. So the form of economy we've got at the moment, which has been based for all these years, for decade upon basically upon casino banking and asset stripping, etc. The economy is wrong. It's sick, and it needs to be. We need to recreate in this country a creative economy that puts the people into high quality employment that will actually generate for the country an actual honest living. We've got far too many people who are not creative in society. Are you there?
Yeah, no, we're
not
listening.
Yeah, no, we're listening.
No, well, we asked you what your question was, and it's not really a question. It's just,
it's a mad rambling statement, isn't it?
Yeah, but I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, until we end up with some politicians who have thrown their hat into the ring and expecting us to elect them, who are actually willing to tackle these massive issues, and what's going on with the NHS at the moment, it's just, you cannot overemphasise how important this is. We can't have the NHS collapsing. It's got to have money put into it, and that money's got to be found from somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you agree, Mitch?
Yeah, definitely. I think the politicians have to really look at their policies and make the NHS a real priority now.
I mean, just to come away from the NHS a bit there, you mentioned the police. They're also saying the same sort of thing is coming out of County Hall, because they're saying if you make too many cuts, this time next year we'll be run by Southampton or Portsmouth Council because we won't be able to afford to run our own.
Well, they're managing to turn the whole country into this horrible dog-eat-dog sort of place, whereby public services count for nothing, and the more vulnerable you are, the still more vulnerable you're going to be in the future, because there's just going to be nothing there for you. The only people who are going to be doing all right are the casino banker-type people. They're the only ones who are doing well out of this economy. And still nobody is actually saying, hang on a minute, we've got to make some absolutely gigantic changes here.
I agree with what you're saying. Pete, I know that we discussed this off-air earlier on with Alison. She does a Tuesday now, so maybe you come in one Tuesday very soon.
Yeah, all right then.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Anything else you want to add?
No, we'll deal with this issue. We will discuss what we've been starting on here, you know, and talk about public services, the NHS. Also, I mean, another aspect to it that really gets up my nose is the idea of putting hospitals and schools in competition with each other. It's just ridiculous. You don't need schools in competition with each other, and hospitals come to that. What you need is a basic level of a standard that everybody in the country can look to, so they know very well that their local hospital, their local school, reaches a minimum standard, and that it is a good, decent standard. You don't want schools in competition with each other. You don't want hospitals in competition with each other. It's just mad.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, Pete, all our public services, because they are run as businesses, if they don't see a profit, then that's it. They don't want them, do they?
Well, they cease to be public services. Isn't it? No. Did you notice last week there's a hospital up in the Midlands somewhere? I can't remember exactly where it was, but it had been taken over by the Circle Group.
Yeah.
And that group have handed back the keys, saying, oh, no, it's too expensive.
Yeah, they're making a loss.
Too many people coming in with the flu, etc. and that. It's too expensive to run the hospital. They're handing back the keys. Now, that tells you what you need to know about the private sector getting itself involved with the NHS.
That was the first hospital taken over, wasn't it?
And yeah, like you say, they've just, for the money.
Yeah, they've handed back the keys, haven't they, because it's not viable.
Yeah, they want the money. They're only interested in cherry picking the profitable services. Everything else can, you know, sort of just be allowed to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, so that just shows you that the NHS, it is not viable to be run as a business.
No, it shouldn't be. It should be run as a reward for a well-run economy, a reward to the British people for an economy that is well-run and that they are all allowed to play a part in. That's how it should be viewed.
Hear, hear, Pete. Thanks,
cheers,
you, thanks
have
for
a
your
nice
call.
One. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. Got loads of questions I want to ask you, and we're trying to squeeze them in between now and 1 o'clock from an array of people out there that are listening to Vectis Radio's Lunchtime Social. We'll be back in two ticks.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone. 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
The Hair Lounge is a unisex hairdresser's in both Newport and Ryde. With its experienced team of stylists, we pride ourselves in offering great-looking hair at affordable prices. Whether you are looking for expert colouring to precision cutting, The Hair Lounge is the place to be. At The Hair Lounge, we pride ourselves on being a forward-thinking salon, which uses the industry's leading brands and techniques to always make sure our clients look and feel their very best. Call them 01983 718584 or visit them at 35 High Street in Newport. The Hair Lounge are also at 9 Cross Street in Ryde, or call 01983 564447. The Hair Lounge is the place to be.
White Trash. 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 Trash.
White Trash World, the home of the island's very own skate brand, White Trash. 59 High Street, Ryde. It's open Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays, 10:30 till 6 p.m. Not just about skateboards, it's clothing, gifts, shoes, books, DVDs and more. The island's only skate store, White Trash World, Ryde High Street.
Does your garden need attention? Why not call LCL, Lee Cook Landscaping, to put it right? They are specialists in driveways, patios and paths, brickwork and stonework, decking and furniture, fencing, water features, lawns and planting, and garden maintenance. You can find them at www.lclandscaping.webs.com. Interested in our services? Then get in touch with us via the form on our contact page and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Or email lclandscaping37@gmail.com. That's lclandscaping37@gmail.com. Lee Cook Landscaping is a high-quality building and landscaping company partnered by D. Rigby Building and Landscaping.
Business Insight, a weekly programme of interviews and insights from some of the island's most respected business leaders on what drives their success, plus business news and information to help your business succeed in today's fast-paced and competitive business world. Mondays at 6:20 p.m. on The Evening Event with Darren Fernando. Also available for download and podcast online at vectisradio.com. Business Insight is brought to you by Jigsaw Sales and Marketing Consultants, driving business success.
White Office Equipment. We pride ourselves with being able to offer genuine inks from the major manufacturers at very competitive prices. If you can find the same ink anywhere on the island cheaper, then we want to know. As well as original ink, we also offer a range of competitive inks. We're at the High Street in Sandown, opposite Sainsbury's. Come and see us or call 400-045. That's 400-045. She's got
the look. The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone, 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
It's the Lunchtime Social. We're here until 1 o'clock. We've got another call and we've got some questions on Facebook. They're coming in thick and fast now, but we've got Bex on line one. Hi, Bex.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
Good. I'll be in tomorrow.
Good. Let's hope so. You used to work at St Mary's, didn't you?
I worked as a community psychiatric nurse for many years, and then I worked in social care, trying to set up a mental health service within social care for looked after teenagers for 4.5 years.
And how long have you been out of the job?
I've been out for about 3 years. In the end, I burnt out, which I don't think is uncommon in medical professionals in this day and age.
Okay.
A couple of points I want to make, really. The first is, you know, this idea that our NHS is free. It's not free. We all pay for it. Every penny that goes into the NHS is taxpayers' money. That's one point I'd like to make.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the second point I'd like to make is your previous caller was talking about, you know, a reward for a well-run economy. I think that we as a public need to maybe be given choices about where we want our tax monies to go. You know, if Trident is going to cost £1 trillion, who wants Trident? You know, where are the choices in that? If £75 billion a year is in tax avoidance, that would actually pay for 75% of the NHS as it stands now.
Yeah, yeah. What's Trident?
Trident is the nuclear submarine missile type thing, which they're upgrading, which at the moment is costing us £3 billion a year just to look at if we want to be upgraded or not.
maybe it's a case of when these politicians are going to get voted in, they say, right, okay, from now on in, you've got to have a policy where you say, where are you putting your money? If you're going to put loads of money into Trident, which is what, you know, okay, the nuclear side of things, and by the way, if you're going to put your money into the train, I'm not going to vote for you because I need someone to put the money into the NHS because that's more important. Maybe if they're a little bit more honest with their policies and so on and so forth, we wouldn't be in this mess and we'd know exactly where to put the cross.
Exactly. I mean, what we've got at the moment is this smoke and mirrors victimisation of people who are using the NHS. It's lifestyle, it's, you know, people using A&E inappropriate. The bottom line, Ian, is it's systematically being defunded for years and years and years. There's not one year that I worked as a nurse in the NHS where we weren't told we had to make significant savings every single year.
Do you think, and I mean this is the question that I've heard, or not a question, I've heard people say this all the time for the last, you know, 10 years or so.
Yep.
Do you think the ultimate position where politicians or these people that are making the decisions for the cutbacks, they don't want a free NHS, or they don't want an NHS that is, I mean, you quite rightly said we pay for it, but in some people's eyes and views, it'll be free and the NHS will be no more, you'll have to pay for the nose for it. Do you think that's where they want to be?
Yes, I do. I think the NHS is a constant headache to politicians. I think they view it as a sacred cow in many ways. I mean, interestingly, Nick Clegg is coming on board now saying he wants to reduce suicide rates to zero. Well, where's he been in the last 5 years when they were cutting beds in mental health? You know, they're leaping on this bandwagon right now, some of them, and using, if you like, the misery of the millions that they've caused by coming up with these kind of let's fix it. Well, the way they should fix it is not to interfere in the first place and to fund it properly.
What do you think, Mitch?
Yeah, I totally agree. We need to be funded appropriately and in the right places.
Yeah.
Does it really annoy you when things, you know, when they say, oh, we're going to spend billions on Trident, and by the way, we're going to have that lovely new train going up from London to Birmingham, we're going to spend loads of money, but we're going to have to cut yours? How does that make you feel?
Oh, it totally annoys me. They are just cutting the NHS to the bone, and yep, it's just not working.
Which, yep. I mean, at the end of the day, which is more important, life or a train?
Well, life.
Absolutely.
You know, can't put a price on that, can you?
No, there is no price on life.
Anything else you want to add, Bex?
No, I just want to say the Hitching Book thing, you know, the hospital that withdrew saying it wasn't profitable. If you, I've been reading about it because I'm quite interested, obviously, in this kind of thing. They actually withdrew 2 days before the Care Quality Commission report, which showed that they were actually, their standards were not even adequate. You know, so this private company that was hailed by the Tories and everybody else saying, you know, private care is the way forward, it's fantastic, actually proved to be a disaster for the very people that it was supposed to serve. And that was with government subsidies, by the way.
Thanks for your call, Bex.
Okay.
Cheers now. See you tomorrow. Bye. Bye. Okay, Louisa says, why do cancer patients have to travel to the mainland for chemotherapy? Why can't why can St Mary's not provide it, if only on a part-time basis, e.g. once a week or only mornings? Excuse me for being ignorant about the frequency of treatment, which I suspect could be daily.
St Mary's actually does have a chemotherapy unit.
It does?
It does.
There you go. We've nipped that one in the bud straight away.
It's radiotherapy, I think Louisa might be getting mixed up with. They have to travel to the mainland for radiotherapy.
Okay. Well, let's reverse it then. Why can't we do radiotherapy on the island? Is there a reason why?
Cost.
Cost. Comes out of funding again, doesn't it?
Comes out of funding.
Should we? Just say, for instance, if you were now head of funds for NHS and you said, right, okay, you're doing what I say now, we need it, we're going to have it. Would that be the case?
No.
A reason?
Reason, cost effectiveness.
It's not viable.
Viable. We don't have a significant amount of patients requiring radiotherapy to justify having a radiotherapy unit.
Okay.
And there's, you know, a very good one just over the road at Southampton. Yes, I understand it is cost to that patient, but they are funded to be able to go and receive their treatment.
Okay, so it wouldn't be cost effective if we had one here on the island?
No.
But what about if money wasn't an object?
Still wouldn't do it.
You still wouldn't do it?
Still wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I'd invest more in getting patients their social care packages, to be quite honest.
Okay. I mean, do you think we've got it right with people having to go to the mainland and the way things are? I know that I spoke to somebody a few years ago, and she had had problems, and she was going to get on the ferry, and she'd left her purse at home. and they said, "Oh, you can't." Yeah, but I'm going over for. And then, sorry, you can't. You have to go home and get. And she missed her appointment. I mean, it, those sorts of things. I mean, they go on. I mean, you got other things on your mind, haven't you? So, I mean, there are issues out there. So, wouldn't it be better to have something like that on the doorstep?
No.
You still don't think
no,
so?
No, still don't think so.
Okay, I'll take your word. I think, you know, you're the guy that knows. Paul says, why did they send my mum home? And again, this is you don't have to answer this because it's not aimed at you specifically. Why did they send my mum home at 7 o'clock the day she had a gallbladder out with a bag full of drugs expecting me to get it right?
I can't comment on that because I work in A&E.
Sure. Can't do private cases.
Okay, David Nove says, this is a good question. Can A&E staff work under such constant pressure indefinitely?
No, we can't.
Do you put a time limit on it?
Can I put a time limit on it? Yeah, a couple of years. I think if things don't ease up, then we're going to burn out.
Okay.
And that's going to be a real tragedy for the island. But I do know the Trust is working very, very hard in the background to address that problem.
Okay, and you are hampered. Let's just highlight that point again, that you can't... The Isle of Wight can never be in a position where everyone else can be, where they can say, hang on a minute, we're shutting down because we have to. You can't do that because of the stretch of water.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And just remind people the technical term that is.
It's called a major incident.
A major incident, major which everybody incident. Else recently were able to do,
13
put into place,
hospitals.
But you can't. Because you're on the Isle of Wight, so you're hampered.
Yeah.
So you're even worse off than those people on the mainland.
Absolutely.
And needs highlighting. Peaceful Life says, hi Mitch, is the current crisis really a crisis or a heavy influx of seasonal infections, flu, etc.? Perhaps amplified by the social economic conditions, including stress. Mitch, thanks for doing what you do.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. Yeah, is it a crisis? No. We have seen an absolute increase in the amount of very, very ill patients attending A&E, and not being able to move them into wards is causing the problem. So the crisis is not in A&E. The crisis is further on down the chain. And
we haven't even got to the stage yet, though, Ian, that usually there's an outbreak of norovirus, sickness and diarrhoea bug. We haven't got to the outbreak of winter flu yet, have we?
Not yet,
haven't. We've got that to come. I mean, that always comes. Every year that comes. And we haven't even got to that stage yet. And like I said, we've already had 13 hospitals that have declared major incidents. So the knock-on effect of that, possibly in the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, which it will come, you know, is going to make matters worse.
Okay, I've heard so many people say in the past as well. Maybe you could answer this as well about matrons. If we never got rid of the matrons, we wouldn't have half the issues we've got now. How true a statement is that, or is that like a stupid question or a stupid point as well?
No, it's not a stupid point. They did get rid of matrons, but we brought them back.
We've got them back again now.
Oh, have we?
Yeah, we've got them back.
Yeah. Mitch, I didn't know.
About 8, 9 years ago.
Yeah. And.
So again, the media are not putting they're not doing their job. They're not reporting this right, are
because
they?
Because they do a across the board thing, don't they? They don't sort of go for specific hospitals or anything. But our matrons came back 8, 9 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they are doing a superb job. Absolutely superb job. They are down in A&E when we are really under pressure. They are constantly talking to their wards. They are trying to facilitate discharges. They're trying to help A&E in the best way they can.
Okay, got this from Mrs. J. Another idea: spray viruses in the air via planes, chemtrails, cause masses to be ill. Then you can cause mayhem within the NHS and convince people it should be privatised. Think about it.
A bit drastic.
That's
that's just over the top, to be quite honest.
Right. Okay. Over the top.
Yeah, absolutely over the top.
It's a conspiracy theory, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So you don't agree with it?
No.
Okay. We're running out of time, and I just wanted to say because I think Jay Peaceful Life made a really good point of just saying thanks for what you do, because you and your team and a team of people you must come under so much stick from time to time because the frustrations that people have when they go to hospital and, you know, people aren't allowed out because of, or they've got issues and so on, and you must share those frustrations. So it's not a win-win situation at all. You're at the sharp end of the stick, and if people were to listen and, you know, listen to the people, know what they're talking about and make some changes, it's going to make a difference.
Absolutely.
So, but what must be nice for you is when you hear people say thank you.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine that, you know, sometimes their frustrations don't allow them to do that.
No, they don't. But, you know, overall, we do get a very good response from the public to what we do in A&E, and we appreciate that. And we're just trying to provide that service so that the public can come in, be treated, and get on with their lives.
The occasional box of chocolates or tea bags don't go amiss, does it, Mitch?
Oh, no, it comes in very handy.
Hey, look, it's really good to meet you. And honestly, keep up the good work, because I think you guys up there are keeping us all going. And, I mean, you know, more power to your elbow. You know, so I just hope that in the next few months we get a government that will actually take note, listen to the people that actually know, don't just tick boxes, because it's all very well seeing Nick Clegg walking around a hospital with his tie tucked into his shirt, thinking he knows that he's, you know, he's listening to you, because obviously they're not. Why do they tuck their shirts in like that?
So it doesn't flap about and cause infection.
Yeah.
Right, okay, which is a shame, because, you know, you'd like him to get infected, wouldn't you? anyway, I just, you know, hopefully you'll come back again soon and, you know, tell us that things are improving for you.
Very much so. I'd love to come back. I'd love to go through this again and you know, listen to the people and answer their questions for them. And, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. And are you Australian?
Yes, I am.
Good.
He's Bruce.
I've been sat here quietly thinking, I'll
ask the question. That's his nickname at work, isn't it?
Bruce.
Bruce.
thank you, Prickles.
Thank you.
Tomorrow's show, we're back with Bex, and we've got Vix Lowthian, the Green parliamentary candidate, coming in tomorrow from 12 through to 1. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your messages on Facebook. And thanks to you, Mitch.
Thank you very much.